The Sydney Film Festival finishes tomorrow night with a documentary called 20 Feet from Stardom. That's to say 20 feet behind stardom, really. It's a film about backing vocalists, and it's directed by Morgan Neville. And we'll talk to him from LA via Skype in just a moment. But let's listen to a little bit from the film first.
So what did you guys do on the part?
Yeah. I'll help you carry on.
It's almost more of a mental leap than just the physical act of singing. It's a conceptual leap. And if you can comfortably come up with it, you know, then you may find a spot out there.
Carry on.
But I know tremendous backup singers who just aren't comfortable in that position. You gotta have that narcissism, you gotta have that ego.
Shall we do it?
It can be a pretty long walk.
Sugar Plum Fairy came and hit the streets, looking for soul food and a place to eat. Went to the Apollo, you should have seen him go, go, go. They said, hey, babe, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey, honey, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls say, doot, 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 doot.
To what it is that we do. No one till right now has publicly acknowledged it. But people love to see the background singers. I mean, when you think about Lou Reed, Walk on the Wild Side, you know, that iconic song with the line that makes a lot of people uncomfortable because it says colored girls. But what is he referencing when he says, and the colored girls say, doot, 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 doot. The fact that there's a power to these women that stand on stage and sing with these guys.
Backup singer just brings so much more life to the situation. When a voice opens up, there comes the life. That's when it's a person-to-person connection.
Hold on necessarily to your individual vocal persona, because you're trying to get your persona to blend and mesh with the other voices. That's awesome.
Well, that's the sound of Talking Heads, of course, and we heard in that excerpt from the film 20 Feet from Stardom the voices of Bruce Springsteen and two of the backing singers who talk in the film, Janice Pendarvis and Lynn Mabry, who sang with Talking Heads. And this is where we ought to be hearing the voice of Morgan Neville via Skype from LA, but he's disappeared. Which is, in case you ever wonder whether this show is live, here is all the proof you need. We have lost our guest. He's not answering his phone. 20 Feet from Stardom is the film about backing singers who stand about 20 feet behind the stars, and the backing singers tend to sound a lot like this.
Down the street, watch the way he shuffles his feet. My hoe is head up high.
Well, that's the Crystals. He's a rebel, except that it actually isn't the Crystals. They were on tour at the time that that recording was made. And it's one of the many revelations which we encounter in the film 20 Feet from Stardom, which is a documentary about background singers, as they call them in the United States. And it is going to be the film that closes this year's Sydney Film Festival tomorrow night in Sydney, the end of the Sydney Film Festival. The director of the film is Morgan Neville, and in the course of the film, he talks to a great many backing singers who've worked with some of the big names in rock music over the years. Tom Jones, Ray Charles, Bruce Springsteen. Sting, who makes quite a contribution to the film himself, Ike and Tina Turner, and the Rolling Stones is a very interesting segment where Mick Jagger talks about recording Gimme Shelter. Now, Morgan is on the line from LA. Morgan, welcome to the music show.
Hi. Sorry. All the problems. It's our opening night here in America, so it's all a little chaotic.
That's okay. Okay, we our listeners are not aware that we lost you about four different times. But anyway, there you are. Now, in the meantime, we have heard about 3 minutes from your film in the last hour of the show. We've heard a bit of Lou Reed singing "Walk on the Wild Side," and we've just heard the Crystals, in inverted commas, singing "He's a Rebel." Let's begin, maybe, though, with the profession of being what you call in the United States a background singer. One of the things that comes out of your film very clearly is the pride that the singers take in their professional roles. There's an ambition, of course, to come up through the ranks and to become the lead backing singer and then go solo. But even before that, there is this great pride in singing in tune, apart from anything else.
Absolutely. You know, I think backup singing is really, a lot of backup singers see themselves in service to a greater good. I mean, it's part of why they all come out of the church, and there's a sensibility that comes out of the church, not just the amazing harmony singing, but an idea that you're serving something greater than yourself. And I think a lot of backup singers think of it as a higher calling. And they're there to make somebody else shine, and they're incredible at what they do. But as you said, some of them do have ambitions to be lead singers, and that's the complicated road that, you know, we explore in this film.
Yes, and you tell some remarkable stories, some really very moving stories, actually, and some of the singers get breaks and some of them don't, and some of the ones who have breaks, they go wrong. Let's maybe talk about Darlene Love first, since we've actually just been hearing her sing, in fact. That's one of the songs, one of the stories that goes right through the film, and it's a name that I suppose some people will know if only from the Phil Spector Christmas album.
Sure. I mean, Darlene's probably the world's most famous backup singer, if that's not an oxymoron. And, you know, she was a protege of Phil Spector, the legendary Wall of Sound producer. And Phil would take different voices and put them on different records and not really care about what names went on those records. So, for instance, in "He's a Rebel," the song you just listened to, Darlene had started as a background singer, but he needed a lead singer. So he had Darlene step up, and she actually sang the lead vocal track on that record. But when the record came out, it was under the name The Crystals. And he continued to do this over and over. So, you know, it's what they call in the backup world ghosting, you know, singing a record that comes out under somebody else's name, but the backup singers are doing it. And when I would talk to them about something like Milli Vanilli, that famous case of that band, they just laughed and said, "Oh, honey, we were Milli Vanilli long before Milli Vanilli was Milli Vanilli."
So the Crystals themselves would go out and lip sync to Darlene Love's recording.
Sometimes on TV they would do that, and on the road they would, you know, often sing live. But you know, they would be lip syncing somebody else's voice, Darlene's voice, many times. And you know, in the beginning, I don't think Darlene minded because the money was good and she wasn't really thinking about being a star. But you know, once she had a couple of top 10 hits that she sang that weren't under her name, it started to eat at her and basically led her on that long road from the background to the foreground.
Yeah, via cleaning houses. Tell us that story.
Well, I mean, Darlene had made a decision that if she was going to try and be a lead singer, she had to go cold turkey on singing backup. And that was her livelihood. And, you know, in that commitment to only singing lead, she found herself broke and ended up taking jobs cleaning people's homes and did that for, you know, a couple of years. And she tells a story in the film that's heartbreaking about cleaning a woman's bathroom. And while she's doing this, she hears her own voice coming out of a radio singing "A Christmas Baby, Please Come Home."
The one from the Phil Spector album.
Exactly. And she decides in that moment that she has to really give up what this house cleaning and kind of reinvent herself and really push in a way she hadn't before. And it's been that road for the past 40 years till her getting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame just a year and a half ago that we follow.
Yes, yes. And so that's the kind of the very warm success story in the film. But there are others which are less happy, aren't there? I mean, there are people who get recording contracts, for instance, and then the recording contracts are shelved or the second album just doesn't happen.
Absolutely. I mean, every backup singer I talked to had some flirtation with being a lead singer because they're all so incredibly talented. And part of what the film gets into is that talent is probably the second or third thing on the list in terms of what makes a star. And I think they all had to come to terms with that. And, you know, the excuses they had were sometimes they were funny and sometimes they were tragic, you know, but it's the wild west of the music industry. It's luck, it's ambition, it's promotion, it's all those things, and it's talent. And, you know, backup singers have a lot of talent, but they don't necessarily have those other things.
But it's also sexuality, isn't it? Because, I mean, the singers don't just sing, they move. They are action figures, to quote Claudia Lanier, who was one of the members of the Iquettes with Ike and Tina Turner.
Yeah, absolutely. That's part of the job. And I don't think backup singers think about that when they get into it because they're singers first, second, and third. But they realize that to be a backup singer often means you have to get up there in a small black dress and, you know, move in a often very suggestive way. And that's part of the job that I think all of them look at as an occupational hazard. But some of them are very good at it, I have to say.
And in particular, this becomes an issue, I think, when rock and roll takes over the backing singers, because what began in the sort of world of soul and early Motown and so forth is in the process really of going out of fashion when rock and roll comes along, stadium rock, and suddenly people like the Rolling Stones, for instance, want this group of singers 20 feet behind them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was that British invasion when those artists came over and really kind of that second wave of British invasion. So it's, yes, the Stones later on starting around Let It Bleed, but then Joe Cocker, Humble Pie, you know, all of these English bands in the late 60s realized they could actually come and record in America, and they could actually, you know, they were all huge fans of American R&B and soul, but when they realized they could actually have those real African-American voices on their records through these backup singers, they embraced it in a big, big way. And so, you know, no longer were these voices just singing on soul and R&B records. They were singing on major hit rock and roll records.
And we actually follow one particular song, really, because we see Mick Jagger talking about recording Gimme Shelter, and we see Mary Clayton talking about being got up in the middle of the night virtually and going in her pajamas and her rollers. Tell us about this.
Sure. I mean, Gimme Shelter is probably the greatest backup singing performance of all time. And Mary Clayton, who is a, you know, really well-known within the backup singing world, great gospel voice, who had sung with, you know, just about everybody. And she got a call in the middle of the night from Jack Nitzsche, who at the time was helping the Stones produce Let It Bleed. And she didn't know who they were. She said, they're rolling somebody's, you know, but they sent a car for her and they were going to pay her triple scale. And so she put on a morning coat and slippers and had curlers in her hair. And she went down to the studio and they gave her the lyrics for the song, Rape, Murder, It's Just a Shot Away, you know, and Mary, being a good Christian woman, said, what do you want me to sing? I don't think so. And she had a long talk with Keith and Mick, and they explained the lyric to her. And she said, okay, I'll do it because I want to get back to bed. And she did the song three takes. And it's absolutely incredible. And, you know, that's part of it, is that these singers didn't really have any idea who these English rockers were, but once the hits started coming, they absolutely took notice.
Yes, of course. And we, as I said, we followed this song because Mary's job is taken by Claudia Lanier next, and there's this lovely moment about halfway through the film, a little eyebrow raising moment where no words are expressed at all, really, but Mary clearly doesn't really approve of Claudia.
Well, you know, Claudia was, she'd been an IKET, and the IKETs were the sexiest of all backup singers, you know, Tina Turner and Ike Turner and the IKETs. And if you ever watch footage of them, as you do in the film, you know, it's kind of jaw-dropping, even in this day and age, to see just how much sexual energy there is there. And Mick Jagger certainly took notice of this, and he became quite friendly with Claudia Lanier. And, you know, Claudia is a great singer, and so she spent time with Mick. I know she told me later she dated David Bowie, and he had written the song Lady Grinning Soul about her on Aladdin Sane, which is pretty amazing, too, and being a muse to those two men. But obviously, it was a two-way street. You know, they enjoyed these women, and these women certainly enjoyed the attention of these rock stars.
Claudia Lanier is now a teacher. But the Stones, of course, are still touring, and they're out there working with another singer, who Lisa Fisher, who indeed, you know, had her own album and won a Grammy and has now gone back to being a backing singer, and she's the one who does Gimme Shelter every night on stage.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Lisa is an important person to me because she's a person who, when you see just how talented she is, there's no doubt that she, by all rights, should and could be a star. And in fact, put out one record and it won a Grammy, and she kind of was a star. And she decided very consciously, this is not something for me, you know, and she never put out a second record, you know. And it's the thing about being, you know, 20 feet from stardom, being at the back of the stage, is you not only see the advantages of the front of the stage of being the star, but you see all the disadvantages and all the bad baggage that goes with it. And I think, you know, having to do that, to be the star, having to run an organization and, you know, look perfect at every moment and all that other stuff, she didn't care about. For Lisa, all she ever cared about was just singing. And so in a way, she's kind of this pure expression of the backup singer ideal, that it's just about harmony and getting paid to do what you love.
Yes. I'm talking to Morgan Neville on the music show on RN. He's on the phone from LA. He's the director of the film 20 Feet from Stardom, which closes the Sydney Film Festival tomorrow night. Judith Hill, we also have to talk about, because this is also a fascinating story. Somebody who was the backing singer to Michael Jackson for many years, and then after Michael Jackson's death is branded a traitor by some of his fans for continuing her career with behind behind somebody else, as though she should have, you know, sooty-like thrown herself onto the funeral pyre along with Michael Jackson and ended her career. It would have been the right thing to do, apparently.
Exactly. I mean, and it was definitely a mixed blessing singing behind somebody like Michael Jackson. And in fact, she didn't sing with him for years. She had just joined the tour that he was going to do, the last 40 dates he was going to do in London. And she was rehearsing with him for what was to be the This Is It tour. And she never got a chance to perform live with him. She performed in rehearsals. And then when that Michael Jackson This Is It movie came out and everybody saw her rehearsing with him and doing a duet with him, they realized how great she was, and Michael loved her too. And so she thought her career was over. You know, she had this big chance to be a singer with the biggest pop star in the world. And right on the cusp of that happening, it disappeared and really threw her for a loop. And, you know, on the one hand, she was embraced by Michael's fans. But on the other hand, they did kind of want to keep her, you know, frozen in amber as Michael's backup singer forever. And that's a hard thing to toe. As she said, you know, backup singing can be a springboard or it can be quicksand.
Yes. It was a wonderful film. I very much enjoyed watching it. As I said, it'll be on at the Sydney Film Festival tomorrow night, at the finishing the Sydney Film Festival for this year. I dare say we will see it in our cinemas later, hopefully on television as well at some point. Morgan Neville, thank you very much indeed for taking our call. I'm glad we were finally able to make contact with you.
Absolutely. Great talking to you.
And let's listen to a little Talking Heads, complete with backup singers.